Hello and welcome to my game. No, hi, episode 102 of the Playthrough Podcast. It's a new Tavra new series. It's the breaking news series, it's Claire Obscure. We're short-handed tonight. I'm here with Mads and Jim. Hello, boys.
Hello. How are you?
So, a bit of a surprise episode, a shadow drop from
surprise
Playthrough.
Episode for a surprise game that we weren't supposed to be covering at all, but Chris couldn't stop saying, oh, I can't wait until we can cover Claire Obscure. No. Oh, man, why can't we cover Claire Obscure? And so on. And then we took pity on him.
We did. Well, it's not the summer, is it, if you're not playing an RPG?
Apparently. No, summer RPG. Well, it was a bit like that, wasn't it? I mean, I think I was going on about it so much, you guys were like, well, why don't we just play it then? But I was already 15 hours in at that point.
So it's a short game, so you decided to play it. Like
we
twice.
Broke all the rules, didn't we? Not only are we playing a game from this current year.
Oh, yeah.
We're breaking up our schedule.
We've thrown it all out the window.
It's all gone out the window. So it's a surprise in every single way.
Yeah. And it was too much for Andy, so he really didn't want to be here.
Yeah, so Andy's putting up a fence or something, isn't he? What's he doing?
He's
trying to keep us out. When we get there next week, he'll just be behind his fence and there'll be no gate or anything.
Maybe that is why he's putting his fence up. He says it's to keep the dog in. Maybe it's to keep us out.
Suspect that's it. Yeah, and when the rogues descend on him next week. But before we get into Claire Obscure, this is only going to be a short one, by the way. And I know we say that, but it is definitely only going to be a short one. So have you guys been since finishing Life is Strange? I know it's only been a week, but humour me.
I've been good. I've been playing a couple of arcade games. We've been doing that, haven't we, Mads, over on the RA High Score Challenge, my word.
So is Alcon Slap Fight?
Yeah, same game. I think the only difference is I think they changed a few sprites on the start-up, on the title screen, I think, from what I read.
So Slap Fight, the Japanese name for the game?
I think it is, yeah. Right, and they've changed a few sprites as well. On the start-up screen, you see the main ship and all the additions sort of come in. Mm. And I think that's different from what I read.
I've never played Slap Fight. Is it good?
I haven't submitted a score yet, though, but I played it when we picked it. I played it a bit just to see how it played.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that, the scoring system, where you can sort of, you collect the stars, so you shoot a ship, and then you pick up the star that if it drops one, and then you can convert those stars into, like, speed or weapons.
Shield
is good fun. Yeah, so it adds another level to it, especially like you're trying to collect you get to a tough bit and you try and aim it so you've got your shield to sort of get you through it. Yeah. And then you'll end up accidentally picking up a star or something and it loops back around. You're like, ah! Yeah, I really like it. Yeah. Wasn't so keen on Snow Brothers. I think I ruined that for myself, Mads.
Nah, Snow Bros is brilliant, and I loved trying to high score chase it.
Did you?
Sadly, I didn't have time to play any much at all, because I only played the first 2 days, I think, and then I've been stuck at work pretty much constantly ever since. But I loved trying to rag up those scores. You needed to kill all of the enemies in one go with your snowballs there to get the high scores, and that was good fun.
Yeah, but do you not find like you would get into, like, say, stage 3, and if you missed it, then that's it, you're resetting, because the scores just rocketed up so quick.
Yeah, exactly.
And so it just ruined the game for me a little bit, really.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that totally. I've played it so many times before, so I can pretty reliably get to level 20, to that boss in level 20. So I've seen that part of the game so many times, so this was just playing the first 12, 15 levels over and over again, trying to maximize score instead.
Mm.
Nice. Yeah, no, I didn't get anywhere near level 20, that's for sure.
Okay.
But I was just short of 300,000, which I thought was a half-decent score. I was outside the top 10.
So what else is there over the course of the month? I've obviously got Alcon for week 2. What is it, week 3 and week 4?
Oh, God, so the highlight Guardian. Is Guardian, isn't it?
That's going to be a good one. Jim's pick. And then Zero Wing, right?
Yeah, we finish on a banger.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah, Zero Wing's very famous, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, mostly for its funky translation and stuff like all your bays are belong to us.
Oh, yeah, I love it. I love it, yeah. Got the good old Japlish.
Yeah. That's it.
All your faces are belong to us. Yeah, it's an absolute classic. So looking forward to Donkey Kong next week, Jim?
Certainly am, mate. I was hoping to have Prince of Persia finished by then, but I'm nowhere, and I'm not going to be anywhere near.
How many hours into that are you?
Not much, 5 or 6.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's about 30 hours I spent in the end. But I think that...
But
that
I'm playing it on... Playing it on story mode as well.
Story mode?
Yeah.
It's hard.
I've heard. So I was like, oh, do you know what? I can't be doing with that. So just, I'm not in the mood for that. Story mode it. Yeah, I'll have it really smashed out before Donkey Kong drops and I'm nowhere near.
It's really good though. It is really good.
I really
not really
like
sure
it.
The story's strong enough to carry the whole game though if you haven't got the gameplay to go along with it. But
I was thinking Prince of Persia game is a mechanics game. Not a story
yeah.
Game, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's more like, yeah. So it's, I'm getting enjoyment in the exploration and all that sort of, you know, the Metroidvania mechanics.
Yeah. It's good.
Yeah.
I heard because there was supposed to be a run of DLC for The Lost Crown.
Okay. I know they released one, didn't they?
One of them. There was only one, but the others got cancelled apparently because commercially it didn't do as well as Ubisoft expected. But I read, and I forget where it was, whether it was in Edge or on one of the websites, that actually it's been hinted that they've resurrected the sequel.
Oh, good.
So the sequel is, I don't know, I'm sure I read somewhere that it is in development, the sequel.
Yeah, good.
Ubisoft need a bit of goodwill, right?
they need to put something decent out, don't they? Which when they, you know, Prince of Persia is good.
Well, Assassin's Creed Shadows, I think, was well received and has done well commercially by the sounds of it.
Yeah, yeah, but what was the one, the Pirates one that they pushed and that flopped hard?
Did that even come out? Skull and Bones?
Skull and Bones, yeah, it's out, yeah.
Did it? Yeah, we don't seem to have a lot, though, do they?
No.
As opposed to Capcom, which just seem to be absolutely nailing it.
They do,
With their, I mean, they just seem to just go from strength to strength, don't they, Capcom?
They do.
With all the Onimusha stuff and the new Resi games and...
Yeah, and then even, like, they'll even dip into that back catalogue. You can go out, there's all those Marvel versus Capcom, the beat-em-up stuff that they've released.
Yeah, that's done really well, I think, hasn't it? That beat-em-up collection they put out.
Yeah, but even the latest one's got, like, both the Power Stone games on it.
Yeah.
For the first time since their original release. Yeah, awesome.
But even that Pragmata trailer that they released at Summer Games Fest, you know, that game they announced about 3 years ago, no one had heard sight nor sound, and they bring it back, and then people are raving about it. It's almost like everything they touch turns to gold.
Yeah.
Fun times. I've been playing a bit of Castlevania Bloodlines.
Oh, nice. What do you think? I'm in level 2, and I've not gone back to it since.
It's nowhere near as good for me as Super Castlevania 4 Rondo of Blood. But I don't know, like, these classic Vanias do find them hella playable. the only thing is, I find...
Shaka Bra.
So there's two characters in Bloodlines, isn't there? There's the kind of conventional guy. None of them are Belmonts, but neither of them are Belmonts. But there's one of them, John.
John. It's some weird timeline in it with the Castlevania stuff. There must be people out there that really dig like the Castlevania timeline, and they can sort of
tell you who each.
Yeah.
I don't even think about it. John is the guy with the vampire killer whip.
Yeah,
and then there's another guy who can't remember his name. He's got like spear guy. Yeah, spear guy, and I really enjoy the game when I'm playing with him. But I can't John with his whip like. You can only shoot the whip diagonally if you jump at the same time.
Yeah, it's really weird, isn't it? I don't know what they were thinking.
There's some navigation things where you've got to use the whip to swing across gaps.
Yeah.
And I can't get it consistently.
Yeah.
But I did get to level 5 last night, though, which is the penultimate level.
Oh, no, there's only six levels. I might force my way through it then. Because I can say state it on the Switch as well.
But God, does that difficulty ramp up though once you get to level five?
Is it?
It really does ramp up. I'm enjoying it though. I won't finish it because I always hit a difficulty wall with these things and then I get fed up of trying. But all the while
we both finished Super Castlevania.
Yeah, I'm finished Rondo of Blood.
Yeah, I fell off Rondo of Blood, but I finished Castlevania.
Rondo of Blood's really good. Castlevania 3 didn't finish.
I was enjoying Rondo, but I just got distracted with something else, I think.
Don't really know where to go next with Castlevania, because the next one by release is Dracula X, which is the Super Nintendo port / remake of Rondo of Blood. Can't decide whether it's different enough to try that on its own.
Probably not. I'd say probably the GBA games, isn't it, after that?
No. So the next one is Castlevania Legends on the Game Boy, the third Game Boy game.
Oh, no, they were still putting stuff out on the Game Boy.
Yeah, that was like 97.
Blimey.
And then the next one after that is Castlevania 64, which I've never played.
3D. No, I've never played it, but it reviewed horrifically, didn't it?
Yeah, so
no,
it didn't. It's really, really bad, isn't it?
It didn't review horrifically. Really?
Did it? I thought it did.
Only heard bad things about it.
Yeah, same, Mads. Yeah.
Well, one of the N64 Castlevanias reviewed well.
Okay.
Then there were two, I think, on the 64.
I think there was two, yeah. You're right there.
I'll be playing it, mate.
Are you?
Got to play them all. Haven't you? Got to play them all.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been enjoying that. Obviously, I've been playing Clair Obscur as well, and I'm already 6 hours back into that. So halfway through Act 1. And my word, what a game.
So how far into... I've just done Mansion, the bit in the Mansion.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm past...
Is that about halfway, or are you just a little bit further?
No, I'm further. So I've completed... Cool. That's part of the Flying Water section, right? I've completed the Flying Water section, and I'm just kind of pootling around the overworld, kind of between the next kind of critical path location. But once you get through Flying Waters, the map actually opens up a little bit, and there's quite a few optional locations you can visit.
I've got no idea what you guys are talking about. I haven't even seen a map. So
you basically get to, once you get through the first area, when you get to the continent after the prologue, get through the first area, and then you're into, I mean, it's sort of like a world map from traditional RPGs, not quite.
Okay.
It's a hybrid between like a navigable area and a traditional world map. It's quite cool.
Yeah. It is pretty cool, especially when like some of the little shortcuts come up. Like there's a bridge in there, right?
Yeah, you can unlock a bit of shortcuts. Yeah, and that carries on. So you can basically go back to any location that you've visited and redo
them. Guys, you need to be careful not to spoil anything. Not for me, but for the listeners, because they'll know that this is just about the prologue.
Yeah, there's nothing to spoil. There's nothing spoilable in that.
That's good.
But let's get into it then. So Expedition 33, released earlier this year. Mm-hmm. I first became aware of this watching the Xbox Game Showcase.
Mm.
And I can't remember whether it was part of Summer Games Fest or whether it was part of the August one, what's it called, the Jeff Keighley Spectacular in August. I wanted to go to it this year.
Oh, Gamescom.
Gamescom.
I think, I feel like it was Gamescom.
I think it was, and it immediately caught my eye because it looked like it showed traditional JRPG gameplay with a bunch of characters on one side of the screen and a load of characters on the other, and they were attacking each other, and it looked amazing, and it all looked very Gallic and French. And I thought, ooh, I think I might have even gone on Slack and said, oh, I quite like the look of that Clair Obscur. When did you guys first become aware of it, Mads? Do you remember seeing any trailers, or did you get on any hype train for it?
No, not at all. I don't remember anything. Not before you and Dan on Retro Asylum's Discord started talking about it.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, that was after release, right?
Yeah, I had no idea it was coming. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. What about you, Jim?
Yeah, same as you, really. I watched the Gamescom. I thought Microsoft had a decent showing, actually, to be
they
fair.
They did, yeah. Because they were showing off things like South of Midnight, which also came out around the same time. And there was quite a few shown off in that little conference that they had.
Yeah, it kind of felt like, obviously, we've seen a different side of them to them recently. But at that point, back in August, it felt like they'd bought all these studios, and it felt like we were starting to see the fruits of it, if you know what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I know this is obviously, it's not Xbox exclusive, but at the time.
It was day one Game Pass though, this.
It was, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So Kepler, who published it, also, they obviously have some kind of deal with Microsoft. Kepler, by the way, pretty big. They're pretty big deal at the moment, Kepler. If you look at some of the other things they published, so they first started publishing games in 2022. They've published the likes of Sifu.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Remember Chia? That one that was like this Breath of the Wild light and...
I do, yes.
And it did all right.
Yes, I remember seeing that and thinking, yeah, that was a bit of me.
Ultros from last year, just that kind of very colourful Metroidvania.
Metroidvania, that's right, yeah. Like that neon sort of Metroidvania, wasn't it?
Yeah, Flintlock, yeah. The Siege of Dawn. Do you remember that one? Got a lot of kind of pre-release hype. Again, it didn't do gangbusters when it released, but it seemed to get quite a lot of pre-release hype. Bionic Bay, really well-reviewed game on the PS5 from earlier this year. They released that. And they also recently published Rematch. Don't know whether you got... Well, Jim, I'm sure you've heard of this. The kind of Rocket League meets footy game developed by Slow Clap.
Yeah, I've heard it, not played it.
It's good.
Is it?
It's good fun. Yeah.
Worth a look?
Oh, it's on Game Pass, so it is definitely. So these guys are kind of doing good stuff in this also AA kind of indie space. So I was on board with this sort of from day one when I watched the trailers. I go on a lot of kind of RPG dedicated websites because it's my favorite genre. The preview started dropping around February, and there was a lot of excitement in the kind of corners of the press that I read, less so kind of really on the big websites. So a lot of stuff on like RPG Fan about this, and I think there was a Eurogamer preview, and there was a lot of people getting excited. I remember reading in January that the film rights have been signed up.
Oh, nice.
Okay. I remember thinking then, like, that is really kind of, yeah, that is up front. You know, that is before the game is even anywhere near release at that point. And they're already...
I mean, even in the early stages that we're all in now, it screams like a TV series or something like that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Absolutely, I think it screams it.
I think you can see it. So I was pretty excited for this right from the off, really. And then I knew it was coming to Game Pass, but I actually picked it up day one on the PS5. I had it in my mind that it got some kind, that it was sort of, that it optimized for the PS5 Pro, but actually I've gone back and rewatched the Digital Foundry review, and actually it's not. So the PS5 Pro and the Xbox Series X, according to Digital Foundry, pretty much are on a par. It's also had a PC port, which has done all right. Steam Deck less so it is not optimized for Steam Deck, and I think it does really suffer if you're running it on a Steam Deck.
Yeah, I looked at it on the Steam Deck, and there was just too many caveats. So because I wasn't sure if I was going to be like going away or anything, so I was like, well, it felt like ideal to have it on a portable. So Switch 2 would have been amazing.
They've talked about a Switch 2 port potentially. So they've kind of gone down the whole. I wouldn't rule it out, but there's nothing
in the pipeline at the minute. But yeah, so there was just too many caveats for the Steam Deck, and then my PC is not powerhouse enough anyway. So
yeah, it's an Unreal Engine 5 game, so it needs a bit of power. It's become a little bit of legend, hasn't it? When there's so much negativity around the games industry, you know, with these huge teams of being laid off. Then there's been a lot of press around Sam 4 with a really small team kind of coming and making a game which has been so well critically received. I think what they've said is, look, it's a bit misleading that. And I think they've actually said themselves that although we've only got a core team of around 30 people, they've actually used a lot of partners and a lot of subcontracting. So the team that have made this game is actually a lot bigger than 30.
Yeah.
But it still doesn't have an Ubisoft behind it. It doesn't have Microsoft money, not in a traditional sense of Microsoft owning the development team. In that, these guys are all people who had worked at other software houses, some Ubisoft, some first timers. The composer, Lorient Testard, was looking for work. This is his first gig.
No way.
Can you believe it? This is his first job, and he's... If he doesn't win Emmys and if he doesn't win Grammys and BAFTAs for this soundtrack, I'll be absolutely staggered.
Yeah.
So it's a mixture really of industry, experienced industry professionals, some first timers. and they've struck gold because the critical reception for this game was absolutely astronomical. What did you think going in, Mads? I mean, I know it, sometimes it's hard, isn't it, when you know people have been raving about a game. Yeah, it can create these like false high expectations, which actually can be damaging to your experience.
Yeah, for sure.
Like how for sure. Did you approach it with a bit of trepidation?
So I've actually played the prologue twice, because when everybody was talking about it, primarily you and Don on the Discord, I checked it out because it was in Game Pass, and I played through the prologue, and I guess I was just not in the right mindset because it didn't really grab me. I played through the prologue, got to the mainland, then turned it off and didn't turn it on again for a few weeks. But this time I had a bit more time, and I wanted to see what was actually there. I guess this is also me in the mindset that is that I'm playing it with you guys and to discuss it on Discord and so on and so forth. That means you give it a better chance of actually grabbing you. And I loved it. I loved it. It's such a beautiful game. Really, really well presented. As you said, the soundtrack blows you away from
straight
the get-go.
Away.
I mean, it's straight away as you turn it on. It's like, I don't know why how to describe it really, but turn up the volume because you're really going to enjoy this. One thing about the soundtrack that I'm worried about is it has these really distinct hooks that they overuse already in the prologue. So maybe it'll be a soundtrack that grates on you in the end, but let's see.
The soundtrack is absolutely huge. There's hundreds of tracks.
I'm glad that you say that, because in the prologue itself, it was beautiful. But if I have to hear once more, I'm probably going to kill myself.
I've had that in the next area that you go into, the meadows. It's a vocal piece. And every so often, like it's about what, 3 or 4 minutes?
It's a full track,
piece.
Yeah, it's about three or four minutes. Yeah.
But it loops around, and I got myself a little bit lost. And so that was annoying me. And then I just kept hearing this, "Don't be afraid." that was winding me up something chronic. But then you go into the next area goes back to an orchestral piece then.
Okay. The soundtrack is really beautiful already in the prologue. The graphical presentation is wonderful as well. And the story intrigues me. So, I'm all in. Only little thing is one thing that is a bit uncanny about it is the way they control the eyes. So if you notice that when people are talking, the eyes are flicking around just a tiny bit too quickly, which makes it look very unnatural. Especially Sophie in this part looks really, really uncanny if you look at her too closely.
Yeah, the facial animation generally is not quite there, is it? It's not quite up to the standard as we've seen in other games, I don't think.
But it doesn't need to be. It just needs to be. I mean, if it's actually because it's so good that you notice stuff like this. Because if it was more stylized, you wouldn't notice. Yeah. But it's so good that
it's almost
little things like the eyes being a bit off just sets it off, I guess, in some way.
Yeah. Some of the emoting at times looks a bit weird. You know, like it doesn't quite match the tone of voice, and the lip syncing is not right, is it?
Yeah, the lip syncing's definitely
all of this stuff is in the reviews, to be fair, but the reviews aren't wrong. I mean, it's not, the presentation's excellent, you know, I think technically it's doing some really cool stuff with the Unreal 5 engine.
And I just quickly back on the lip syncing and stuff like that and the character models, I don't think it takes away from like the impact.
Not at all.
And the voice acting is good, which is what carries this kind of thing then.
Yeah.
So the voice acting, so there are some famous actors in this. So I won't, one of the characters you haven't met yet, Mads, so I won't even mention who it is, but Andy Serkis pops up in this game. Charlie Cox is Gustav. Charlie Cox is Daredevil.
Daredevil.
In the Marvel Universe. Others you probably wouldn't recognize, but things like Jennifer English is a famous voice actress. She voices Mael. Shayla Nix is another one who pops up in many, many games. She voices CL. CL is someone who you meet briefly in the prologue, but who comes back a little bit later. And Kirsty Ryder voices Lune, who are some of the early characters that you meet. And that's a great performance. Lune is one of my favorite characters.
Yeah. Yeah,
she's really cool. But there's others who we'll talk about in due course as we go through. Some of these characters, I'm looking down the cast list, I don't even recognize the names from the first act. So, but it's a top draw. It's a top draw, and it's brilliantly directed and brilliantly performed. And, you know, we've just come off a good game in Life is Strange. It is a good game, you know, and I think what where we landed was that the writing was good. This to my mind, though, straight off the bat, the presentation and the delivery of this script is just on a different level.
Yeah.
To almost, you know, in my opinion, and we'll see how the story goes. I've only seen a little bit of it myself. We'll see where the story goes. But, you know, sent you guys a link, didn't I, to Neil Druckmann. And he just finished it. And he for Neil Druckmann to say, I was blown away by the plot, tells me that we are in for something special. But you can just feel the quality dripping off the writing. Just in that initial exchange between Gustav and Mael that they have on the balcony there. There's like, you know, the ability to write rapport between two characters. Straight away, Mads, I mean, you said in Slack, straight away you sense that paternal bond between Gustav and Mael. It just, you get that sense, I reckon, within about 10 seconds of them talking to one another, don't you? Like, it comes across, she's teasing him about Sophie a little bit, and he's being a bit sarcastic back. And, you know, have we finally reached that point where video games are just as well written as, you know, primetime TV? Feels that way when you play this?
Sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes. Some are. Sure. I mean, I love the voice acting here. The animation and all that is good as well. But as you say, you can immediately feel the love between Mael and Gustav. But it's not the kind of it's more the kind of paternal love, as you say, with the some, she's her kid, his kid in some way, right? And we learn later on that she is really, because he kind of adopted her when her parents gamashed.
She was orphaned, wasn't she, when her parents gamashed?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about the scenario. I mean, we haven't got a lot of story to dive into, but the scenario here is that we are in a fictional French town called Lumière.
Mm-hmm. We're on an island, aren't we?
It's an island. Well,
it's really away from the mainland.
It's become an island, I think.
Hmm.
Because there was some kind of cataclysmic event called the Fracture that happened 68 years before the events of the game. Mm. And I think whatever happened, and we don't know what caused this fracture, but the result of it was Lumière has almost become disconnected from what they call the continent, which is over a body of water and where Act One starts.
Yeah.
There's a touch of magical realism going on, because, you know, if you look up, you see almost like bits of floating rubble and buildings and
there's some weird stuff going on between the buildings as well, like this wrought metal that kind of clings to the buildings.
Yeah,
I don't know if you noticed that, which is definitely something that seems to have happened when that cataclysmic event took place, right?
Yeah.
But it looks really weird. It doesn't look natural. It does look magical in some way.
It's definitely, I mean, it doesn't take long before you get into Act One as well, and you start seeing more magical realism elements. So there definitely is, you know, a kind of a magical side. But in a lot of ways, this first environment, Lumière, feels like a typical small French town, doesn't it? As you work your way through to the harbour and the bit where the fish festival's going on, you know, it feels like, you know, a Parisian suburb in autumn, doesn't it? And
flowers everywhere, isn't it?
Yeah, and leaves on the ground. And it's a really nice place to walk through. But the whole, so just to finish off that scenario a bit then, so this cataclysmic event has occurred. I'm maybe I should be clear on this, but the Paintress has either appeared, or the figure, the entity that they refer to as the Paintress, is across this body of water, way off in the distance. I mean, it's pretty much visible all the time here in the distance. And the Paintress sort of squats down by this, what they call the monolith. And on the monolith, there is a number. And that number has been ticking down from 100 every year. And every year, anyone who's over the age of the number on the monolith effectively disappears. So they call it gommages. Now, gommage is a French word typically used to describe like the exfoliation of dead skin cells. So in its literal sense, it kind of means to rub out or erase. So think of like the Marvel blip. Like there is a blip that's happening. These people don't die in any violent way. From what we see, what happens to Sophie, they turn almost like to petals, don't they?
Yeah, like flower petals.
And then she's given, they carry a flower, don't they, with them as they
go. And that's how, so they wear some kind of like garland or something. Yeah. And that's a, so every year they have like this festival for those who are about to gommage. There is a festival to almost kind of celebrate their lives, almost like a living funeral.
Mm.
And then at some point during that day, the paintress is going to change the number. And at that point, those who are of that age or older disappear. I mean, it's a fairly, in some ways, I suppose it could be seen as quite a depressing and fatalistic scenario, but it's not sad, is it? Like, it's not like they're all there crying. I mean, they're having this, it almost feels like a bit more of like a celebration.
That depends on how you look at it. There are women standing with their children who are crying, their partners hugging each other. I see this as a very, very sad occasion in most of the ways you look at it, and most of the people and most of the faces you see.
And when you listen to some of the couples that are talking as well.
Yeah.
I mean, it is sad by its very nature. It's sad, isn't it? I mean, these children are being orphaned and... Mm. You know, if their children have parents the same age, those parents are going to disappear at the same time.
Yeah.
I was also confused, and I kind of managed to sort this out with Maupin on Discord earlier today. I was confused about, well, so if you are, let's say, like, it ticks down to 33 during the prologue.
Hmm.
And I was thinking, well, what if, like, I'm not 33.
No.
What if...
I know.
What if like you were 33 when it was on 34 and then you became 34, but after it ticked down to 34, you wouldn't have gommaged on gommage day.
You'd go after.
Mm.
So like, would you gommage on your birthday? But actually what happens is it's when it ticks down, everyone who's that age or older gommages.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
And of course, nobody can really be older, I guess.
No.
Yeah, so eventually they won't. They keep referencing it, don't they, that the Lumiere is getting lower and its population is going down, getting lower and lower, obviously, with each year.
Yeah, and at some point, it's going to get to the point where there is nobody left, because once this ticks down to zero, then obviously everyone dies.
Yeah.
The other thing that's going on here, as we learn in the prologue,
if they do die, we don't know.
I use the term die.
Do we?
They gommage. To me anyway, it feels clear that they don't die. They go in somewhere.
So it doesn't need to go down to zero. I'll let you think about that.
No, it doesn't need to go down to zero.
But it can't go down to zero.
No.
Because they'll all be dead at around when it goes to 10.
Yeah. Yeah, because there'll be no more children.
No, exactly. Yeah,
very true. The other thing that goes on every year as well is that an expedition is sent to the continent. So beginning with Expedition Zero was the first one.
Yeah. Did we do the little quiz?
Yeah.
The guy who gives you the little quiz. Yeah.
So I like the fact that if even from the get-go they said that it was only those who had 1 year left to live that went away on that expedition, then Expedition Zero would be 99-year-olds.
Yeah, good luck for them.
Yes.
So every year an expedition goes off, and the idea, I suppose, is ultimately to try and destroy the painters.
Yep.
But their motto for the expedition is essentially they're laying the path for those who follow. So you get a lot of "for those who follow" and things like that. So the idea is, even if they all die, they just carry on going. And the idea is that with every expedition, they'll leave notes and tips behind for the subsequent expeditions.
Each expedition will get a little bit further.
Yeah.
And eventually
they'll get there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a lot of like myths and, you know, tales like of the boogeyman, of what lives on the continent. And some of them are true and some of them aren't. And you get to live some of those fairy tales that you hear right at the start of the game. All that as it reveals during the course of Act One, which I won't say any more about, it becomes really cool. One of the really cool collectibles I find, and Jim, you probably found at least one of these so far, is the former expedition. You find the former expedition,
the almost journals.
Like the audio logs, the journals.
Yeah.
It's cool. And you can find one for every expedition that's been.
There's a lot of them.
Yeah. That is right, isn't it? They started at Exposition Zero and they're working up.
Yes.
The Paintress is ticking down. The expeditions are going up,
yes,
aren't they?
Yeah.
Because there's loads of audio logs you can find, isn't there?
I think that's right.
So the first expedition was definitely 67 years ago. That's what they say in the quiz. So, yeah. But they are naming the expedition by the number that's on the counter, right? So they are now Expedition 33, because it says 33 on the monolith.
Yeah.
But wasn't the first expedition Expedition Zero?
They did call that Zero, which doesn't really make sense.
No, because in the you can definitely find journal entries that are numbered, like, and on the flags as well, once you get onto the continent, like, and the flags which represent like the rest points, like imagine like the Dark Souls bonfires.
Mm.
They have the different expedition flags, and there's definitely some that are more than 33, isn't it? Like, I've definitely seen like one at 50 something.
Yeah, but that makes sense if they at some point started just doing the same numbering as they do now, because otherwise this would be Expedition 66 or 67.
Yeah, it would. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a little bit confused as to how all that works. It doesn't really matter. Yeah. But that's essentially kind of the scenario, isn't it? That's the world in which we start as Gustav, who is an expeditioner. He is going to be part of Expedition 33. If it's my impression is that this expedition sets off the day after the Gamage.
Yeah,
that's how I understand it as well.
And it consists of people in the final year of life.
Yeah, they give their final year to try this expedition. Not all of them, but some of them choose to do that.
Yeah, apart from Mael.
Mael,
who wants to go on the expedition with them.
Yeah, I mean, she feels like there's nothing there for her in Lumiere.
She wants to go to the continent.
She wants to go to the continent. She wants to try and do something. So Mael is 16 at the start of the game.
Okay.
So because Gustav makes a point, it says to her at some point, you've got 9 years left.
Okay.
Why do you want to come on the expedition? But she does. So I worked out that would put her around about 16.
She's got 9 years left. Certainly that must make her 22, mate.
Well, if she's got 9 years left, that would take her to about 24.
Ah, of course. And they'll be ticking down
and
at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so we'll meet her in meet
of course,
her. See, Mads, numbers.
Yeah, you're good at that.
I'm good at numbers. You know me, mate. Mm. Trust me. So Gustav is one of the expeditioners. After the Sophie leaves, you get that. You get that they're having basically having a big piss up before they go, aren't they?
That's right, yeah.
Where they basically
which doesn't make sense at all. I mean, the next day you're going off into battle, you know it's going to be tough. Why would you be drinking so much that you had a giant hangover?
But don't you think there's hundreds of years of like history around the Battle of Agincourt and stuff like that where they just got absolutely hammered and then just went headlong into battle?
It could be, but this kind of battle is really not the one you want to do with a hangover. this isn't just running forward with your sword raised. This is actually doing magic and stuff like that.
Well, they don't know what they're signing up for, do they?
No, but they've been training using that magical thing. They've
got the Lumina Converter they talk about, don't they?
Which
Gustav's lost his arm at some point as well.
Yeah.
Mm.
He's got like a robotic arm or something, hasn't he? Or some kind of like weird arm. And there's a series of training battles that you can do. There's a real proper tutorial battle with Mael.
Mm.
There's then a later battle with Mael where she's tougher. There's a battle with a mime,
yeah,
which is weird.
Yeah.
And down one of the side streets. And is there another one?
There's a dance that you can do with Sophie, which is...
Oh, yeah, that's cool. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And then he draws the painting. So you have to dodge your attacks, isn't it?
That's it, yeah.
He calls it a dance, yeah. So you don't really learn much about the... I mean, at the moment, you know, Jim will know the term Pictos and Luminas and...
Yeah, know them. slowly get into grips with it all.
Yeah, I've got no idea what it is so far.
It's a lot. The battle system is a lot in this game. In my opinion, it's too much, or at least it throws too much at you too quickly. The only thing is, like, it's not... I don't think it's a particularly difficult game on normal difficulty.
Okay.
But, we'll talk about this on the next episode, the Act 1. There is a lot...
But if there ever was a game that would be great to just play in story mode, this is it. I mean, the storytelling here is brilliant. So, no shame in choosing story mode.
That's what I've done.
Is really good, mate. What are you on? Okay.
Yeah, I'm on story mode.
Oh, why?
I just fancied it.
You're missing out, man.
He's going all the easy Andy on us.
Yeah, I just fancied the story mode.
So what is the... Is the story easy? Normal is Expeditioner. That's where I'm on.
Yeah, I took the default, as I always do.
Yeah. It even tells you that this is the way the game should be played.
No,
it says the default.
It actually says, and I almost chose story mode, because it says, choose this if you like narrative games.
Yeah,
I love narrative games.
I don't play a lot.
The right thing to choose.
But it's mechanically really interesting, this game, Dan. You're going to miss out on this stuff.
No, because you can still take hits. If you mess up the parrying and stuff, you still take hits.
But you don't need to strategize with stains and stuff like that, do you? Because you can just bash everything.
Yeah, I'm not interested in that though.
So, how many times did you lose to Mael the first time around, Jim?
Oh, I haven't lost a fight yet.
Okay, then it's a lot easier. I lost a handful of times at least.
I was hammered on Saturday after being out at a music thing, local music thing. Tried to play it when it got in about 12 o'clock. I was absolutely battered. And needless to say, I couldn't parry anything.
Nope.
The only time I played a little bit on my portal, and that little bit of lag the portal.
Yeah.
I thought, like... After we got like the new internet and everything, the portal's been really good.
Yeah.
But that little bit just throws it out.
Screw you over.
It's buffering, isn't it?
It does buffer buffers.
Yeah.
And that's a good point. So are you guys playing on graphics mode or performance mode?
Performance.
I've got no idea. The default. I just turned it on my
graphics is the default.
Yeah, so that'll be 30 frames per second.
Probably.
There's not a huge amount of difference, like in the, you know, some lighting differences. There's a little bit of kind of additional ray tracing according to the Digital Foundry video.
Yeah.
But the big difference is you'll be playing in 30 frames, and that means you will have a harder time parrying.
Oh, so I might just switch it to performance mode then.
I play in performance mode. Okay. The only thing with performance mode, I mean, on the Series X and the PS5, I've played both now. It's buttery smooth, I find, at 60.
Yeah.
But, like, the cutscenes drop it down to 30, which, to be honest, like, I'm not really that bothered about this stuff, but it is a bit weird when your gameplay's at 60 and then a cutscene comes in and it goes to 30. But it is a choppy 30.
I think it's that noticeable shift, isn't it, more than anything?
But it feels choppy in the cutscene, Jim. Do you find that?
I've not really noticed any choppiness.
Well, maybe it's just an Xbox thing.
But it's a notable switch going from gameplay into the cutscenes.
Yeah. And if you were playing a 30, you wouldn't notice because there'd be no change. It does make you feel a little bit. There is a clear divide between gameplay and cutscene, isn't it? Because the frame rate halves.
Yeah, I think it still looks really good in performance, though.
Oh, it does. Yeah.
So if I switch, it'll be the first time ever I played anything in performance mode, because I really don't care about the whole 30 or 60.
Neither do I normally.
I just want the nice graphics.
No, I'm normally exactly the same. And, you know, I would normally just leave it on whatever the default was.
Yeah, exactly.
But it does make a difference to the parrying. And I even tested this. So I wasn't convinced from reading a few things online.
Hmm.
But I definitely found it harder. Not impossible, but I found it harder to parry.
Okay. I'll have a go.
30 frames.
Yeah. I just think it feels, because I was playing it in graphics mode at the start and then switched over to performance, and it just feels so much smoother.
Okay.
How are you finding the whole dodge parry mad? Because that's really the only thing you can play around with in the prologue, isn't it?
Yeah, I find dodging is easy enough now. Now I understand how that works. Parrying the windows is just that much smaller, so I never, ever actually parry anything these days. I need to practice that, I guess.
Do you know the beauty of this game and the battle system is that you could go through the whole game without taking any damage? Because every attack is dodgeable.
Too late, though, because I've taken a lot of damage.
But you could.
I got beaten by a 16-year-old girl, you just told me, so. Five times, at least.
Five times. Andy said he's stuck on one of the... he's doing a bit of a moping here and refusing to move on through the prologue until he beats, assume it's the mime.
Yeah, it could be. I got the mime on the first go, actually. He was easy to read, so he was easy to dodge.
One of the great things is when you encounter a new enemy is figuring out their tells.
Yeah.
I love it. And then when you do, like, because some of the enemies will have like four or five different attacks within the one attack sequence. Mm. So, and if you want to land a counter, you have to parry all of them. It becomes almost like a rhythm action game, Jim, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
I can see that.
Like, you know, where you parry, like, and you got to get the timing down. And when you pull it off and you get that big flourish with the counter and a little bit of haptics and you're doing like super damage, like double the damage output. I mean, the payoff is so good.
So quick question, because I haven't really played anything further than the prologue. I just seen myself and my team get decimated when we land on the mainland. But apart from that, I haven't seen anything. Seeing as the combat is just this, you need to learn how to read every new enemy that you encounter. Does it punish you in any way for losing? Is it okay to just go into a battle and say that I just want to see how the mechanics work here and then lose and then try again?
Yeah, the checkpointing's really generous.
Okay.
There's loads of saves.
So you don't just start at the same battle. You actually need... Oh, okay, so it does punish you.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going into... So the checkpoint is really generous. Mm. You can trigger an autosave at any time by, like, changing hairstyles, for instance, or...
Okay.
swapping out a weapon will make it autosave.
Okay.
It's autosaving. I mean, it's not as... It's almost like a Dark Souls levels of... It's constantly saving, almost.
Okay.
It's... And you've got access to your last three saves. So if you go
more than
into
that, mate. You have access to your last 20.
Oh, is it? I've only noticed three when I've gone into the menu.
You've got access to loads of them.
Oh, right. Okay. Oh, okay. Where are they then?
So if you press the select button or whatever the... What is it? Options or whatever it is now on.
It's the trackpad on the
PlayStation. Oh, right. Okay. So you go into loads recent saves, and there's a big list of them.
Oh, right. I'm sure there is. I've got three. It gives you your last three. Definitely.
Well, anyway, I mean, you don't even need... I mean, if you're going into a significant battle match, whether it be a harder... Some of the battles aren't random. The enemies are there in the field and you engage them.
And you can walk around them. That's one of the things I really like.
Yeah, you definitely can. Yeah, yes. But if the game knows that this is a slightly tougher battle, you'll normally get, your character will normally say, oh, this one looks a bit more dangerous or something like that.
Yeah.
It will also save you just as you're approaching the arena. Although I came a cropper earlier, I was having a quick go, and I ran, so I was struggling with this particular baddie. So I ran round it to get the loot, but it was on me as I picked up the loot, and I died, and it checkpointed me as I picked up the loot. So as soon as it loaded back in, I was straight into the battle again. Now I could have gone back and loaded an earlier checkpoint and it would have been fine.
Mm.
But in the end, I thought, well, I'm going to have to just beat this now. Beat it in the end, but that was a tough one, really tough. I felt underleveled.
Do you find you've got to be more tactical then?
Oh, for sure.
Because I am literally, I can just attack. It's basically like attack skills. I can give my teammates like an attack boost. I'm not really having, like, I'm not like blocking or anything like that.
That is a shame, honestly. I honestly, and I'm not just saying this to tease you, even though I think you are a complete you are
less of a man for sure.
You are missing out on a really, I think, a really great part of this game. I have issues with the gameplay. I do. I don't think it's perfect, and I think it throws too much at you too soon. But it's so much fun, like piecing together. I don't want to say too much, but using one character to do one thing, which will have a kind of a buffing effect on another one, which will then trigger something else on another one. And thinking about like how to piece these things together to like adapt to an enemy's weakness. It's so much fun.
I didn't even know all of that. There would be teams. I thought it was just you.
No, you have other NPCs.
Okay. Later on.
If you watched any of the trailers, you would have seen that.
But so you can choose who you like. You play as if you like, can't you? If you click.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't have any impact on the game. Other than you can see the avatar
You can see the back of your avatar.
So I honestly, mate, I give it a go on the normal difficulty. It is not difficult. I say it's not difficult, but like in a boss battle, two hits and you're probably gone.
Really? Oh my god. Yeah, like depending story on mode, you can take a good beating.
Yeah, depending on where you are. So I managed, and I was trying to see how far I could get in Act 1 without taking any damage. And I got right the way through that starting area, including the boss, without taking any damage. And that was a combination of just being able to parry and dodge and just finishing off enemies quickly. Because you get a 20% boost on your XP when you don't take damage.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. And that's cool. But I think honestly do think you're missing out, mate, on some really, really interesting like tactical RPG gameplay.
Maybe I'll bump it up then once I've got my head around.
You can change the difficulty at any time.
I did see that.
If you put it up and you find it too difficult, or you think actually I'm just not digging this, I honestly think the gameplay is not for everyone.
What I didn't want to do, I don't know about you, Mads, because I know Chris plays a lot of RPGs and he lives for this sort of stuff. Grinding to get your levels up in an RPG. I haven't got time for that.
Well, just don't do it then.
But if there aren't any random encounters, you can grind.
You can grind.
You can, because if you use a rest point, the enemies all respawn.
They respawn. Ah,
okay.
So it's a bit like Dark Souls. Mm. So in fact, that is lifted exactly from Dark Souls.
Mm.
So if you choose, so resting replenishes your health potions and stuff. Will heal your party, cure any status effects, and replenish the very limited health stuff that you get.
Yeah.
But all the enemies in the area, apart from bosses, will respawn.
Okay, so you can grind a bit.
You definitely can grind, and to be honest, yeah, you can, and it's quite easy to do it. But I don't know about you, Jim, but I don't think there's any need to grind in this game. It's just not that difficult.
I mean, well, I haven't seen any reason to so far buy my story mode on, I say.
But unless you're people, I mean, and I know that people do this, where because there's no random battles, you could choose to avoid all the enemies and not play any battles.
Yeah.
And the only battles you would have to play then are the boss battles. You're going to find yourself then underleveled.
Hmm.
Because you're not engaging. My philosophy on this is I engage in every single battle that's available to me.
Feel like hopefully that will be enough.
Yeah, be enough.
Yeah.
But I enjoy the battles, man. I really do.
Yeah, same.
I enjoy them. You know, I enjoy, like, you know, if you unlock a new skill, it's like, right, well, how can I work this skill into my strategy? You know, I won't mention the name and we'll talk about this next time. I've got one of my characters who is a damage machine who, if I get the right sequence of events, will unleash merry hell.
When we start the next episode, I want to chat to you about how you're leveling your characters.
Yeah, it's interesting, yeah.
Because at the minute, I'm just kind of throwing points into everything and kind of doing like an even sort of loadout on each character.
So it's opposite of min-maxing.
It's not the prologue. I haven't even got a single XP yet, I guess.
I think you get one for those battles in the prologue. This is what I said to Andy earlier on Slack, is don't waste time with these prologue battles. Just get into the game.
Yeah. I think the main thing to take from the prologue, really,
it's the story. Seth.
The story, yeah. And you meet a couple of characters at the shops, don't you?
Yeah.
I think the storytelling in the prologue is really strong. It's not only, there's the main storyline of Gustav and Sophie, of course. So Sophie is Gustav's ex-girlfriend. They broke up because Sophie didn't want to have children. She didn't want to put children into this world where their parents will disappear suddenly. Yeah. And Gustav really wanted to, and then therefore they broke up. But they are now back together for this final day, really. That's what happens in the hour or two you play this prologue. They're back together, and he says goodbye to her. And while you're walking down to the harbor, because you're really just following her down to the harbor, you encounter so many people standing there, getting ready for the gamash, many of them you can talk to, and that gives you a good, I don't know if it's important, but it gives you a good feeling for what's going on and how people are handling this. But as Jim said, a lot of them, you can just overhear what they're talking about, and that's just as good. I mean,
just go stand next to them.
The writing is good in all of those little conversations, and you really get a feeling of great sadness of this happening, and they feel that it is unfair as well. But a few of them think that this is just they make it into a religious thing and say that this is just the way it's supposed to be, and of course this is good, and they're going to a better place. And I found this so sad, but at the same time weird because I didn't know initially playing this what was going to happen when the Gamash set in. So I had this idea that everybody would just fall over dead and they'd need to, you know, pick them up and drag them somewhere and bury the dead. And that would have been so much heavier, wouldn't it?
Awful. Mm.
Because what happens really is that they turn into flower petals and fly away. Yeah. So you could almost say, like you did, Chris, it's not that sad. It's a bit of a beautiful thing, really. But still there is this sadness of leaving and leaving everybody else behind, right?
I
was in tears first time through.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Oh, God. Did you find the kid? So there's a couple of side quests that you can miss, I suppose, if you just mainline it. There's a little kid who's fallen out with his dad, and he gives you, and you have to give the uniform. And I think his dad has gone off on the expedition.
Yeah.
But he fell out of him just beforehand.
Yeah, and he takes the uniform with him, doesn't he?
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah, and I love that bit afterwards as well. Like when you are in the evening, when they are, you know, they're having to piss up before they they leave off on the expedition. There is a proper, like, I don't know whether you guys have seen, is it Henry IV, the Battle of Agincourt? Like, there's a proper, like, Band of Brothers feel to it, isn't there? Where they're all kind of, you know, they're talking, like, you can go and talk to the leader of the expedition, and some of them are proper, like, gung-ho, right, can't wait to get over there, we're going to go and get the Patriots. Others are scared.
Yeah. Gustav is the leader of the expedition?
He's not the leader, is he?
Is he not? That's how I interpret it.
There's another bloke who's the leader
This is long-haired guy. Alan, is that what he's called?
Alan,
The guy who loses his head as soon as you set foot on the continent.
Yeah. And then there's Lucian as well, who's a cool character. He's the one who dies right at the end of that cutscene. He gets beheaded, doesn't he?
Yes.
He doesn't get beheaded. He's the
that's
one
Alan,
who,
right?
That's Alan.
He gets his head smashed again.
Yes, squashed. Oh, man, it's so good. And that cutscene when you first get to the continent is brutal.
I mean, the music, but also just the sound design. I was playing it in surround. Now with 7 speakers because my late friend's set up now turned up. It was late at night. Man, it was like watching a movie.
It was so good.
So full on.
Then you get that soft, you know, then you wake up and obviously Akwan starts and you turned it off then, but Gustav is on his own then you know, and the music when Sophie disappears as well, like the atmosphere is just so on point. And I find that, like, in all of the story cutscenes, man, you just, if the gameplay wasn't so good, and I, you know, and again, I've got issues with it, which we'll talk about next time, but I generally really enjoy it. I'd just be waiting for the next cutscene. But the problem is you're enjoying the game so much that, you know, cutscenes can wait. I mean, this is the whole package. I can't wait to talk to you guys properly about what happens in Act 1.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to getting into it myself.
Yeah, man, just enjoy it because there's so many cool moments. I mean, I'm playing it for the second time in 6 weeks and I am loving it, going through it.
I love how you see Gustav, he's so confident at the start and he's explaining to Mael and he, like, we're going out there and we're going to, even if we fail, we've got to lay a path for the next expedition. And then that it just flips it.
Yeah, it all just goes to absolute torch on the beach.
As soon
as they land, it kind of, it, you know, and this is presumably what all the previous expeditions have been through as well.
There's some that never even made it off the beach.
I will talk about this the next time, but I'll just tease it here. So when you land, when the prologue ends, you faint, I guess.
And then he passes out somehow, doesn't he?
Passes out, and then this big thing comes, and instead of killing him, it kind of whisks him away to somewhere else. Yeah. I wonder what's going on there. I've got no idea. But
it's a man, isn't it? There's a man who hasn't grimaged.
The man who beheads Alan.
Yeah, no. This is the one of those big hand monsters.
It's a monster.
Yeah.
Oh right. Yeah, I thought
it's got like two hands, and it's,
instead of picking you up and smashing you like you've seen it do to other people,
it
kind of does this blue lightning thing, and then you disappear and you wake up somewhere else. And I've got no idea what's going on there, so I'm looking forward to figuring out what that is.
Yeah.
It's not going to be straightforward, is it? We're thinking like the Paintress ain't going to be like the big bad. Yeah. I don't think.
Oh, by the way, can I just get back to you asked Jim about how I felt about grinding and when you need a grinding game? If the grinding is done so that it's not only my character that gets better, but I get better as well. So learning the parrying mechanic or stuff like that. I've got no problem with it because that's 50% of how I play Dark Souls.
We spent our time grinding
so much in the Souls games because it was training myself and leveling my character a bit, so it just got a bit easier as well. And I enjoy that. If the combat is fun and learning how to read the different patterns is good fun as well, I won't have any problem doing a bit of grinding. So.
Good point.
I mean, I really don't think it's required in this game. Certainly not from what I've seen, and certainly not for the critical path. I don't know whether there's some optional bosses later on. Normally in these modern RPGs, you get the kind of, there's some side quests that lead you to super bosses, you know, that are completely optional.
Yeah.
You know, but none of us are going to go for platinums or 100%.
So before we move on then, are there any tips as to, I don't even know what the skills are that I can level up yet, but like in Dark Souls 2, we had adaptability was the skill that you needed to level up. Anything like that here?
No.
Okay.
Nah.
Just before we go, I mentioned the shops in Lumiere.
Yeah,
and there's one of the shops that sells an item, and you can choose which item you purchase.
Really?
What I?
Oh, you mean the shops on the final day?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So I got the old. I chose the old key.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, okay, so we've all. So that was a Dark Souls thing because I remember picking something. Like I picked a potion last time, and it was one use. I was like, I've just wasted that.
So we all got the old key. Let's hope Andy picks something else then.
Yeah, from now on, if ever I get offered a key.
Yep.
So I think you get an old key, don't you? And you get a Pictos that doesn't make any sense.
Yes.
That's right.
I don't know what a Pictos is still.
No. The one hint I would give you for the combat, and I don't think the game does a brilliant job at explaining this, is that when you get Pictoses, it will give you some kind of perk that you can equip. You can equip three of these things. It will give you a perk of, it might be that your free shots do 50% more damage, for instance. Or it might be that your gunshots inflict burn. Something like that.
Yeah,
that's it. Or I think one I've seen was if you're successful with the dodge, then you get like a little bit.
You get like an AP. You get like an AP point or something like that.
Yeah.
The things, they're little perks, not essential, but they're nice. You know, and some of them are more powerful than others.
So, do I get a gun later on?
Well, you know your free aim thing. You do use that right at the start.
No.
Oh, so L2 is it?
You do. You use it right at the start. It teaches you in the very first battle against Mael. You can do that. You hold L2 and you've got like a target comes up.
That's key when you land on the next area and you'll see enemies with like orbs, which is like obviously a weak point.
Okay.
Yeah, so you can pull your gun out, shoot the orb, and then you can do your attacks.
Or flying enemies.
Maybe I did.
Flying enemies, for instance, will dodge 95% of your regular attacks, so you've got to shoot them.
Okay. All right.
So you get these Pictoses and they give you a perk. Now, also with these Pictoses, you get like stat boosts. It may be like health plus 50, attack plus 3. So they give you the perk and the stat boost. when you fought four battles with one of those Pictos as equipped, you can then equip that perk without having the Pictos equipped. Goes into this almost like this pool called Lumina, and you can then equip the Lumina to get the perk without having the Pictos equipped. But if you do that, you don't get this passive stat boost.
He's lost us, hasn't he?
He's lost me, mate. You should be losing, Jimbo.
You should be right across this stuff.
No, I haven't grasped any of this. Like, I tried to equip some Lumina or whatever it is, and it wouldn't let me.
Yeah, but you can only you've got a limited number of Lumina points. So you might, I mean, up where you are now, you might have 8 Lumina points.
5, yes, I think.
We need to be on story mode, you and I.
No, because this is good fun, this stuff. Honestly, you miss out. This is good fun, but it is a lot. I mean, it does throw a lot at you, and it expects you to take all of this in. And I'm going through it for the second time, so I'm a little bit more au fait with how it all works.
It doesn't help when it's telling you to level your weapons up, even though you're at a stage in the game where you haven't got access to level weapons.
Well, it doesn't tell you to level your weapons up. It does. Some of the items you pick up says you can use this to level up your weapon.
You're better off just don't tell me that. Don't tell me anything until I know, until I'm actually able to do it.
You're almost at the point now where you can do that.
I am.
I had to Google that first time round because I was like, how do I keep picking these things up that level up my weapons? How do I do it?
Exactly. Yeah, you're thinking, what have I missed here?
Just crack on. You're good. Yeah. But honestly, Mads, that's what you just need to remember, that you don't get the stat boost if you don't equip the Pictos.
Okay. So do I need to go in and equip the Pictos? I don't know what does. Just
you'll get to know all of that.
Okay.
But the game doesn't do a massively brilliant job of telling you some of this stuff.
Okay.
If you're playing in story mode, it's completely inessential because you'll just batter everything.
Mm. But if you play, I want to play it on the normal mode.
Yeah, play it on the normal mode.
Pop on over to Discord and ask people if I'm confused.
Exactly. So, any other thoughts on the prologue or the opening of the game?
Loved it.
Yeah.
Really set it up really well.
Brilliant. Like playing a huge interactive story. So I'm really looking forward to the narrative here. But now, after hearing what you said about all the mechanics, I'm looking forward to getting into that as well.
Yeah, man, I can't wait until we can talk about Akwon.
I just hope I've not seen the back of Sophie.
Yeah. Some of the character models are very, very good looking, aren't they?
They are.
I mean, you think they've done themselves like there's a... Yeah. Yeah, I won't say anything else. I won't say anything more until we reconvene for Act 1.
Yeah.
But no, I'm made up for playing it. Honestly, I blooming love this game, you know. And I meant what I said when I was talking to you guys. I've said it before on here, haven't I? Like, I think this is a game that moves the dial on. For presentation, I think it's one that kind of advances the medium. I honestly believe that, you know. And if this is not a clean sweep of Game of the Year, I'd be staggered. But I think it's one that will just now influence almost every other narrative game that comes after it.
Mm.
It's like The Last of Us. You know, you need these games, don't you? The Red Dead Redemptions, the GTA 3s, you know, they move the dial on.
Yeah,
and I think it shows,
doesn't it? You don't need a big 100-hour Xenoblade or Final Fantasy. And there's definitely a place for them.
Mm.
But you kind of think, well, if you want that mainstream success, then maybe you have to sort of bring that down a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm not an RPG guy, as was already said, and I'm absolutely loving it. Loving the combat. Couldn't put it down the other night. I had to force myself to go to bed.
That's what, half one, wasn't it, when you messaged?
Yeah, something like that, yeah. I had to force myself to go to bed. Yeah.
And that was the mission statement of Sandfall. That's what they wanted to achieve. They thought there was a gap in the market for a AAA style presenter game with traditional JRPG mechanics. And they wanted, and obviously there's elements of the Souls games here as well. There's elements of Persona, I think, particularly in the way some of the presentation is. You look at some of the later Persona games or Metaphor ReFantazio, like there's some of that stuff in there as well. So I think they've drawn from a number of different wells.
Mm.
But man, the first impressions are so strong.
Yeah.
I can't wait to get back to it.
Yeah.
That's what I'll be doing in about 10 minutes, I think.
Nice.
So we'll leave it there for now. Into Act 1, and when we next convene, that's what we'll be talking about. So the staging points, as we've said, very straightforward: Act 1, Act 2, Act 3. first staging point at the end of Act 1, and it's very, very obvious because it comes up Act 2. So when you get there, if you want to play along with us, stop and wait for us, and we'll be behind. It's about 15 hours in.
What about, can we go and, if although it pops up Act 2, can we go back to areas we've already been in?
You can, but don't.
Okay.
I think it's quite important that you stop at that point.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, stop.
I'm just worried that I may...
You've been already playing all of that Act 1 before.
Well, I'm just worried, mate, I'm just worried that come the weekend, that the spare bed will be out and I'll be gaming late.
Are you going to get the... Why are you being kicked out the bedroom?
Well, I will be if I play till like 2 in the morning.
You do that on a school night.
Well, yeah.
Claire Obscure. Cool. Well, farewell, dear listeners. See you for Act 1 in hopefully not too long. Bye-bye.
Bye.